Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I tell you, I hope Scott's right. I hope they're able to walk and chew bubble gum at the same time. I hope they're able to hold people accountable. Ultimately, as I said, you know, one of the biggest problems I had with the Obama administration was they didn't go after those Wall Street criminals. They didn't hold those people accountable for what they did to our economy under the guise of we just need to move forward. And I fear again, you know, it's going to be the same kind of messaging. You know, we need to bring people together. We need unity. And investigating Trump and the Trump crime syndicate for all the stuff they've done would just be divisive. And we need to put it behind us. No, I think we need to lock people up. I think if you committed a crime, you go to jail. Just that simple to me. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the big debate. Also, a little bit about the Trump crime family as well. I've asked our good friend, former congressman, and current fabulous political analyst, Bob Nay, to come talk with us. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thank you for that introduction, Rick. By the way, I've always called them the, and other people do too, the banksters.
Yes.
Gangsters. And there was just a story, I threw it out there, I think, about a week ago, and it involved overseas dealings, and nobody went to jail. Nobody. You know, they fined them for corrupt activity in Singapore, but nobody went to jail.
Yeah, I mean, we never lock the rich people up. They never get, you know, thrown into the general population. Mm-hmm. It's just us poor people. And then I look at the Purdue Pharmaceutical, the potential settlement there. They're going to plead guilty to 3 felony accounts. Anybody going to prison? Any of those guys who were selling that stuff, who you know, were writing emails selling, I want to sell Oxycontin like we sell Doritos. Any of those people going to see the inside of a cell? I doubt it.
Monsanto hired Alice Fisher, and she's in my book. Alice is the one who, you know, prosecuted me. They hired her, and Monsanto, who poisoned people, got off. She pulled strings in the Justice Department. I'm looking at that stuff, and I'm like, look, you know, how do you find the company guilty of criminal activity, but no person in the company is guilty?
Yeah, especially in this day and age where corporations are people.
Right. Yeah, I didn't mean to get off on that, but I think it's a really sore subject for a lot of Americans.
Yeah, me.
Yeah, right.
Sorry, you know, and every time I bring it up about Obama, I've got a couple of knocks against Obama. I liked the guy. I thought he was a good president. There are a number of things he did that was just flat out stupid and wrong. And one of them was not having daily perp walks and daily DOJ pressers on, hey, we're holding this criminal accountable and they're going to see prison time.
Sure.
I digress.
Right.
I did bring up the OxyContin thing. I did want to get your thoughts on that because, you know, the settlement, the proposed settlement, 3 felony counts, something like $8.3 billion in fines that they're going to use to divvy up and do some kind of treatments or infrastructure stuff. And also this potential move from a profit-seeking corporation to something of a nonprofit. I'm curious your thoughts on that as someone who's dealt with addiction and dealt with people who are addicted. Any thoughts on that settlement?
Well, yeah, you know, of course, Purdue Pharma is pleading guilty, and I think what is $8 billion, right, is the settlement.
Yeah, $8.3 is what they said.
Right, and they're pleading and admitting that they enabled the supply of drugs with absolutely no legitimate medical purpose. And so it's a deal with the Department of Justice, you know, and it really it's still going to face, though, I think there'll be thousands of cases brought by states and families, so that still can occur, as I understand it, which is a good step that states can still step in, you know. But they had put out a statement that they were deeply, you know, regretful for, yeah, you know, what they did, blah, blah, blah.
Getting caught.
Of course, the firm has sought protection from litigation they did by filing bankruptcy, you know. So it's got to be approved by the court as they, you know, move on with the Justice Department. But, I mean, I think that, that they should have held. I mean, I'm glad they have to pay something, and I hope it goes for rehab, you know, for people, because they shouldn't go to jail. They need rehab. Especially, you know, I sponsor people in addiction. A lot of people I sponsor are opioid addicted, you know. But none of the perpetrators, you know, are going to, you know, they've exposed the truth, but none of the perpetrators are going to be held accountable.
Which is why, again, it's another one of those things where, you know, the wealthy and the powerful get away scot-free, and the rest of us, we end up having to clean up the mess. And $8.3 billion sounds like a lot of money, but I don't know that it really is, considering the last statistic I saw, 72,000 people last year lost their lives to opioid overdoses. And, you know, I assume it's going to be, you know, just as bad, if not worse, this year, because this administration hasn't done anything to change that. In fact, it's gotten worse under under Donald Trump because they haven't really done anything. A lot of lip service, but no actual things getting done. So maybe I hope that $8.3 billion goes to treatment so that people don't lose loved ones. But it's heartbreaking when you know, because I actually know a couple of people who've lost loved ones to opioid addiction. And it's I'd like to see some justice.
Yeah, I've lost this year alone three people that I had sponsored who were, you know, in addiction. And in the 13 years I've been sponsoring people, you know, to try to help them with their addictions, in the 13 years, Rick, it has just went up escalating in the amount of people from when I started doing this that are opioid addicted. I mean, it just escalated, you know. You can see some kind of bell curve in the last, 10, 11, 12 years. So, again, they've got a criminal penalty in this, but nobody's going to pay a criminal penalty, you know, that knew what they were doing.
Yeah, I think a member of the Sackler family, any member of the family, you know, take the outcast, somebody's got to be behind bars. Somebody's got to be behind one of those tiny little windows that Trump is so fixated on.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So let's move off of this onto the debate.
Okay.
Tiny little windows again. Is it me or does it sound like he's fixated on jail?
No, I heard that today, all day, about, that people are going to have tiny little windows. Seniors are going. I listened tonight to the Florida speech. You know, seniors are not going to have air conditioning, so they're going to fry in the summer, and they're going to freeze in the winter. I mean, I did hear that today. I don't remember reading that in any of the Biden proposals, but I heard that today. And of course, your home state, I knew they would start to go crazy today, you know, with ads and everything else in the state of Pennsylvania. I knew that would happen, of course.
Yeah, it's really the only issue that he can use to divide us here. But to be honest, the fracking issue is extremely divisive in this state because there are some who make their living off of it and in areas that have been depressed for a very long time. So they're like, finally, we've got a way to support our families. I get it. It's a horribly divisive issue and it's all they've got. Let's start with your thoughts on the big debate. Clearly, I thought Joe Biden won. Your thoughts?
Well, yes, there's no doubt Joe Biden won. You know, the key, the generic key for Biden, and then we can go into specifics of, why he won. I think his closing statement was just good, right to the point, looking at the camera. It was emotional. You know, you connected with him that he's in your house talking to you, caring about you, you know, and he did that, I thought, quite well. But in a generic way, looking at the debate, the big key was to not have a gaffe. Don't have a gaffe. Now, it made it a little bit harder, not a gaffe, he didn't have one, but it made it a little bit harder because Trump was, you know, not out of control as he normally had been or would be. He wasn't out of control for the most part. And so that made a little bit, I don't think it pulled any votes in either direction, but it made it a little bit different scenario. I was surprised at how controlled he was.
Yeah. No, I was.
But I think clearly Biden won the debates, and you know there was a lot of points that were made, and he kept referring back to people, which is a big key, you know, to show about the character. He kept referring to that too, so I thought that was a plus.
No, I thought it was. I thought last night, and you know, this after I had watched it and it had absorbed, you know, really let it bang around in my head. I thought last night was the first time we saw Joe Biden as Joe Biden, where he was himself. And what I mean by that is, you know, I've met him a couple of times, and he's somebody who's quick, you know, to kind of, joke around. He's quick with a line. I thought he was more more himself than he'd been in the past. If that makes any sense, instead of being, you know, the number Obama's vice president, I think he really kind of strided into himself there.
Well, you know, you're right. I served with Joe Biden. I worked with Joe Biden in his office on certain issues, you know, a couple of overseas issues we worked on with his office. And Joe Biden, that I saw earlier this year in the debates, because I've been asked a lot, you know, if you know somebody. I mean, I don't know him, you know, like everyday lunch buddy or something, but I knew him. And yet you're asked about it. And, you know, he was just, how do I say this, just a little bit off, not the Joe Biden you kind of knew, right?
Yep.
But last night, he was Joe Biden. And it just, like, it snapped back, like some of the, I don't know, the pressure was off, or he didn't have to worry about trying to conform to something for the primary debates. Anyway, he was, I thought, more of himself last night than he's been in a while.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, some of the one-liners that he had were not things that you scripted. I mean, you knew where some of the one-liners were. They had prepared him for, hey, we want to make sure we get this, you know, this sound bite in. There were a couple of those moments that were just organic, and it just,
right,
it was him being him and flowing right into it. And my favorite one was, you know, there's Abe Lincoln over there. That was my favorite moment, where he was like, you know, he's the most racist president we've ever had.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But
and you know, the other thing that he does, and it's been a habit of his, and so for me, when I see it, I'm like, okay. He goes, come on, man. He's always done that.
Yeah.
Come on, man. You know, if you look at his history, and he said that, and it's just kind of a, I don't know, casual, everyday term. You can kind of relate, you know, to your buddy you're talking to down in the coffee shop, and he goes, come on, man. You know?
Yeah.
So he did that a couple of times.
Yeah, I don't think the debate moved the needle anyway,
no,
shape or form. I don't think, I think we're in our camps already. It's just a matter of tallying up the votes at this point.
Turnout.
But I thought it was his kind of coming out and being, I'm hoping, who he's going to be as president. Just my thoughts. I wanted to move into the Supreme Court stuff. The Democrats, you know, showed a little bit of spine today. A little bit of spine yesterday, not a lot. You know, they can't stop anything. I wanted to get your thoughts on the tactics of this day.
Well, I mean, you know, as far as the of not showing up at the committee, I don't think it's like, wow, the end of the world. I think personally, I think it would have been better if they showed up and voted no and were loud about it. I understand they, you know, didn't go in a protest of the way this is done. I mean, I understand that. I don't think it's the end of the world. I don't think it turns a Senate seat against the Democratic side, but I thought, well, you know, they could have most likely just show up, vote no, and, you know, kind of yell about it, but they decided that, you know, a different route. But as far as this, they were kind of in a box. The way this came in the last throes of the election, the fact that the Republicans were throwing the you know, the Catholic card out there, I thought that they did the best job they could do with a no-win situation.
Yeah, and
no win.
There is no win, and this is where, you know, you have to understand. This is a power grab. This is a power move. It is what it is, and this, I hope Democrats will learn the lesson from it, because Republicans have been very good when they have power of actually using it.
Well, they use it, and then on top of it, you know, I've been to, you know, many Lincoln Day dinner over years and years back, and the Republicans have always pushed very hard in states that control the, you know, apportionment process for redistricting, that, you know, you got to remember the Secretary of State, you got to remember the, you know, in Ohio, the auditor that sits on the board. Same thing, the Senate, they've always focused a lot on trying to remember, you know, who controls that power of the pen to carve districts and to appoint Supreme Court justices,
yep,
you know, and they focused a lot on the Senate last time.
It seems like, you know, someone actually read the rules.
Right, exactly.
This is where I keep telling my Democratic friends, you got to learn the rules. Learn the rules, use mm-hmm. them, and when you get the power, actually use it. And I've been saying, if the Democrats get the Senate, I think they moved to put three additional justices on the court, and we even the court out. At least that's my view on it. And we make it, you know, we admit it's political. I would love them to say, you know what, we're gonna have six justices on the right, six justices on the left, and you guys are gonna have to hammer out a decision. But you know, we'll see how that plays out.
Right. Yeah. I think they have to be bold. If they're not bold, then you know they're not going to be able to maintain what they have. And you know, in a lot of ways, for example, if you look at the House, Nancy Pelosi's been bold about things.
Yeah.
And you have to be.
Yeah,
it's a blood sport business. It's not for the faint of heart.
No, absolutely. If anything, take a page out of the Gingrich book or the Tom DeLay book,
sure.
And when you've got the gavel, you use it.
You use it. Exactly.
That will be the message. But Bob, I appreciate the thoughts and the time. As always, great stuff, my friend.
Oh, thank you, Rick.
All righty, our good friend Bob Ney. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You listen to the Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.